Welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 555. And on this show, we're going to be covering probably one of the most exciting MotoGP races that we've seen in quite some time. And that is the MotoGP from Argentina. But I'm not going to be doing that alone. Joining me to cover MotoGP is our favorite former writer, current engineer, Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty good, Skyler. The weather in Ohio is as crazy as the racing in Argentina.
I think we're just delaying what we really want to get to. So we're going to skim through the news, and then we're going to get right into Moto3. Jim, what do we got for news this week?
Just two quick things for news. David Giuliano is in for the injured Eugene Laverty on the Milwaukee Aprilia team. And Sheridan Morales will join the Pacini Racing team for the Aragon and Aston World Super Sport rounds as a replacement for Keenan Sofoglu.
Just a quick update there on Eugene Laverty. He has now made it home after having his successful surgery there in Thailand. He just made it home. He took the flight. So good for Eugene. Hoping him a speedy recovery. A broken pelvis is no joke. But Jim, now is the time. Let's get it going with Moto3 qualifying.
Moto3 qualifying. For me, it's interesting in this qualifying session because Martin goes out for the beginning of the session without a belly pan on the bike. That blew my mind when I saw that. Because
how does it even happen?
I don't know. I'm wondering on that one because by the rules, you have to have a pan underneath of it to catch any fluids that may be leaking out of the bike.
Right. And,
I mean, I've seen that in, you know, amateur club things and somebody does it or it's not bolted right on or something. But this is a top-notch professional crew. I don't realize how everybody missed that one.
I don't either because when I was crewing, I spent the last 10 to 15 minutes before any race going over the bike. Like, that's what you do. Anything you touched, you go back and check to make sure it's tight, secured. Did you do all your safety wiring? Did you make sure, you know, you check everything. A belly pan's kind of noticeable.
Yeah. I mean, everybody was on it as soon as the bike rolled out. I was on it. I saw it. The guys who were doing the announcing were on it. Everybody was on top of the situation except for the crew that sent the bike out there that way. So that whole little situation might have really messed with Martin's mind a little bit, and it might have been what cost him pole because the track would get wetter as the session actually went on. It was pretty dry at the beginning, and you got to come back in and spend, you know, 2 or 3 minutes putting the belly pan back onto the motorcycle and getting started again, then getting back out there, trying to get heat in the tires on a track that was sketchy to begin with anyway, because the weather all weekend was terrible. It wasn't really raining. It wasn't really dry. It was in between all the time. Absolutely terrible. As qualifying kind of progressed, there was people kind of going every which way. And there for the longest time, Petrucci had been on the front row and on the pole. And he had done that early on. He got one of those banker laps, as everybody likes to call them. He got that in, and it started raining. And it started to come down. It was drizzling. The track was getting a little bit wetter. Nobody was going any faster. You think everything's set for how it was going to be. And then right there at the end, here comes Averoni, comes in, and just knocks Bezzecchi off the pole, which was just okay, where, you know, sort of like one of those where did that come from thing that happened. And the other thing that caught my attention was the Minio having dumped his bike after running off and coming back on. He high sided himself into what would look like a very nasty face plant. Those were the things I had from qualifying. Aberlino on pole, Bezzecchi was second, Rodrigo, Noradin, Bastianini, Gigi Antonio, Antonelli, Canet. Jorge Martin, having recovered from the belly pan incident, qualifies in ninth. And then Minho, even though he fell off, was your top 10.
What is going on with Bodega? I got to figure. And it's not just him having his struggles this year. I mean, directly in front of him, Marcos Ramirez, Darren Binder, both were absolute, you know, front runners last year. And nowhere to be seen so far in qualifying. And, you know, unfortunately, that would carry over into the race. I don't understand what's going on there. Is it a confidence thing, you think, Jim? Or
I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. I mean, there's so much there that it could be. It could be just that he's it's a confidence thing. It could be that he just can't find a setup. He can't figure out what this new bike is for him because he's now on the Sky 46 team. You know, it could be trying to mix and gel with the crew. There's so many different things that could be there, and I, you know, that's one of those things where I think you have to be soul-searching, and you got to just say, okay, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to square one. Hi, my name's Belega, and we try this again, you know. But that's easier said than done.
Then we get to Moto 2 for the qualifying, right? All I got to say, Xavi freaking Virge. I remember the whole, the last five laps of qualifying? Maybe the last 10. The announcers, no one's going to even come close. No one's going to touch these times because the weather was better in the beginning of qualifying than it was at the end. The track was getting that weird on-off kind of shower, the heavy, thick moisture in the air kind of where it kept that sheen almost on the track everywhere he went. And then Virge, I don't know where he was finding the grip to do what he did. Tech 3, they know how to spot talent. We've seen this with Johann Zarco. We've seen this with Jonas Folger. And now even Hafi Sairam, when we get to the race, had a great weekend. But they had Xavi Virge on the team, and they were sad to see him go. And I think we know why now. The guy is a freaking talent.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most impressive qualifying laps I've seen until we get to the big class.
Right, that's true.
I mean, you basically had Baldessari who had pole.
Right.
And again, it's one of those, no one's going to touch it, but there is these weird, in conditions like this, there's this weird thing where you maybe could go as fast as Baldessari could on slicks or whatnot. And then, Xavi, I think he had the wets on the bike. So right. If he had taken the time to change them, there's that crossover point where you can't go any faster on a slick because you've got no grip, but you can find the grip with the wet tire.
So did Baldessari, did he do his lap on a slick?
I thought he did his lap on a slick. I could be wrong, but I thought he had that on a slick because at the beginning, I think everybody went to slicks because it was fairly dry. I think everybody was going down that road. And again, it's that intermediate condition where it's really difficult as a rider to ride in those kind of conditions because it isn't wet enough for the brakes to be useless too, which is what you really want when it's raining. You want it so bad and raining so much that you don't have as much brake as you have grip, right? Mm-hmm. If you've got way more grip on the front end, you can use a lot of brake, but you've got no grip on the front because it's raining or wet or slick, and then you've got way, but it's not enough to make the brakes not grip, not want to clamp on, and when you just touch them, boom, you just down on that. So, but even if Baldessari was on wets, let's just say that he was, because he might have been on wets. Still, the rain was getting worse.
Right.
and Xavi just comes out there and just absolutely just throws it down.
Well, here's something else, right?
Lap.
So, I don't know how many laps, because Baldessari did it early. I think he had set that lap by lap 10.
He definitely did it by
minute 10 of qualifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Xavi Virge literally was the last lap gasp to get there. Would it make sense that maybe it's because Virge was on those rain tires for so long that they kind of hit the optimal wear versus heat versus traction thing out
that's
there?
That's a good point, because if he had them on long enough, he's going to be able to build up the heat in them.
Right.
And it might have been just enough where he finally got, but because a rain tire is supposed to get hot, right? It's supposed to be gummy. It's supposed to turn on and turn on now.
Right, because so that's why you look for the puddles when it dries out.
Yeah, I mean, so that's backwards to it. But, the way people were talking about that track, there was so much grip when it was wet in certain areas. And
right.
The water running off and drying out on the older asphalt was really slippy but had a lot of grip. Or wait a minute, the old asphalt. The old asphalt was dry, right? Drying, and it dissipated water very fast, but it doesn't have a high amount of grip. New asphalt was wet or was holding water, but it was very grippy because it was new. So, when you first put it down, usually you get that the aggregate in there has a sharp edge to it when you repave something, and it takes half a season or more some car racing to kind of wear that and gloss it out and smooth it off on the top. So
right.
That's kind of where it was, but it's one of those things. It still doesn't matter. It's an incredible lap to it. I mean, somebody else who I thought had an incredible time was Joe Roberts, right?
Yep.
He was up there and looking really good on it.
His came late too.
It was kind of early on. He was in that same,
was it?
Yeah, he was in there with that Baldessari thing because he wound up falling all the way back down to 10th. So he had it with let's call it, well, like 10 minutes left, he kind of had went to the top. And I think he was, I think that was when his tire, which I think that might have been when his tires were at it, at their optimum, and he just kind of nailed that section of it. And he's been quick in the rain anyway. But where my question lies is, was that just because NTS brought two new chassis and two new swing arms, or was it just because it was raining?
Well, I'll give NTS this. The boys are trying. You know, it was one thing I was very concerned about when Joe Roberts joined this team is that, you know, Americans going over to the GP circuit haven't had the best of luck, and they haven't had the best of bike as of late. Minus Ben Spies. That was all luck. But
no, that's incredible riding skill. And he took
I meant what took him out. He had bad luck. Yeah, I should phrase that properly. You know, incredible skill. But I mean, his bad luck was why he didn't do as well as he should have, and eventually got to the point where it injured him so bad he just up and had to leave. But like, you know, you look at Heron, you know, all right, maybe Heron, you know, had some bonehead moves, but he was also not on the best equipment, right?
Yeah.
And so that's one thing I was really concerned, like, okay, Roberts is getting a shot, and I don't want to see this, because when Heron came back, there was a little bit of bad taste in the GP paddock of American riders, and it's like, no, dude, we got some fast guys here, just no one wants to take a chance on them, because our series at the time was out in the sticks, you know, people weren't watching, it didn't have the respect of its own fan base, let alone a global fan base, okay, so, but anyway, back to NTS.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, new chassis developer in a class that is, like, the chassis are on a freaking knife edge. They're so sharp now. It's, you know, Kalex and KTM. You're going to come play with those boys. Good luck. Suter took their tail and ran off, you know? So, it's, again, but, man, they came in, they brought in two new chassis and a boatload of parts, and at least, you know, they're giving it up to Roberts and, you know, showing, you know, like you said, qualifying as high as he did. And I think he finished up the 10th.
Yep.
And at one time, I think he was as high as fourth or sixth or something like that. That's right.
Yeah,
when he said that.
He was inside the top five.
Yeah.
Before Chave came around.
Right.
And tumbled
back a little bit. But once again, it's that you need that moment or two where it shows everybody, like, yeah, the boys got some skill. Now we just need a dry weather one, because if you do it in the rain, then you're going to get, you know, you don't want that the rain specialist tag, because as good as that is, it almost seems to do more harm than good for most riders' careers.
Want to talk about MotoGP?
Oh, yeah, we can get through qualifying because, well, we could skim through Q1 because I really want to talk about Q2, to be honest.
But let me hit something that I thought was interesting in Q1. You had both Ducatis are in Q1, right? So here's the team that basically, you know, that won the opening race, and, you know, here we are now 2 weeks on, and they can't even get into the top 10. Which is like, okay, that's not what I would have expected. But again, it was raining. It's on and off kind of a thing. But Dovizioso had got in there. Jorge had got in there. They looked like both of them were going to come through. And then, bam, here comes Aleix on the Aprilia and just knocked Dovi off pole, off of the quote-unquote pole position, if you will.
Yeah, he did a lot in that the fourth sector, too.
Yeah, he did a lot of that in the fourth sector. So that put Dovizioso second. And that knocked Lorenzo out. And then to add insult to injury, here came Carol Abraham on his last lap possible to put Jorge back another one. So,
oh, man. And what's he riding? He's on a freaking GP15, I think. I don't even know if he's on the 16. He might be on the 16, but regardless, it's like, oh, man. Dude. And they cut right to Jorge at the perfect time. He just kind of looks down at the dash and gives the, what the fuck kind of thing as he slams off a guy. What do I got to do? And it's like, oh, man. His whole weekend was just not great. There was that whole, you know, I think this is one of those things we're going to see. There was something taken out of the article. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they had this whole quote from Jorge talking about how Dovizioso has undermined his whole career, and he continues to do so on the Ducati team. And so I read that, and I was like, well, that seems kind of petulant. Like, what is that about?
Did you read that on Crash.net or something?
For real. No, but this went around on couples. So there's this interview done by Movie Star, and apparently it's this really long interview, but they wanted to cut that part out. And then, of course, the Italians ran wild with it. But it seems like they're making a story out of nothing, because I think what they were doing was they were asking Dovizioso a bunch of questions, too, you know, regarding Lorenzo and the seasons and how things are going. And his responses basically lined up with Lorenzo's of they both like, yeah, we're competitors on the track, off the track, we're teammates, we're kind of like whatever to each other, no harm, no foul, right? And so if you apply that to, you know, what Lorenzo said into the team, where he's just saying like, well, you know, we've been competitors for a long time. And remember, there's always the language barrier too, right? There could be some loss in translation or maybe when he was speaking, but he basically was saying like, oh yeah, we're competitors. You know, he's tried to get under my skin. I think maybe was more along the lines of what he's trying to say. I don't know. I think they're making a story out of nothing, but it doesn't even matter because no one's going to give a rat's ass about that story considering what we're going to get into later on. So.
Oh, yeah, no one's going to care. I could care less about that one. Right? So you want to talk about QP2. So go ahead. You tell me what you want to tell me about QP2.
All right, so QP2 goes out, and once again, what are you going to run? We've been doing this all day. What tires? Because Moto3 had the mixed conditions. It had the track was drying, but it wasn't drying fast enough to really take advantage of slicks. So at the end, then you switch to Moto2, right? Moto2's kind of get the slicks. Then it gets wet. Then it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? And then it starts to dry out towards the end of Moto2, especially in between sessions. So now, like, MotoGP, they're sitting around going like, all right, well, let's go ahead and see what we got to do. Well, sure enough, they go out. And it's like rain tires kind of get used to it. We're watching the usual suspects. You got your Marquez up there. And then, you know, a couple like, you know, Johann Zarco gets in there. You figure he's going to get there for a couple good laps. Alex Wren's coming up looking good on Suzuki. But then it's like, okay, it's getting dry enough. Let's put some slicks on, right?
Mm-hmm. Marquez goes up there. He's the first one to go. Yet Marquez is the first guy to give it a try.
And you're thinking like, oh, here we go. It's just like chattering all over again. He's going to be the first to do it, and he's just going to take off and set a lap no one's going to touch. So Cal immediately sees that. He's like, I'm going for it too, which makes sense because Cal is so hard on his front tire. He actually can get the heat in the tire enough to be able to stick it on that track. Those guys do a lap and come right back, and they're like, nah, the hell with that. We're not dealing with that.
I thought Cal soldiered on slicks.
No, I think he held back. He went back in, I think, right with Marquez, yeah.
I know Marquez went back in to go back, but I didn't think Cal did.
Yeah.
But anyway. Right. Okay, that's fine.
So we're running through, and basically, you know, I'm watching this, and Jack Miller's out there on slicks, sliding around like it's a freaking motocross bike. Shades of Kianari from, I think, what was it, Donington?
Oh, yeah, that amazing samurai slide video.
That 2000, what, like, that was like 10, 11, sometime back there.
When it was earlier than that, I think.
Maybe like 2009 or something.
I was thinking 8, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, because he was, what, because that was during, was that during the Spies time? Well, it doesn't matter.
Everybody knows what we're talking about because it's the most amazing wet lap you're ever going to see.
Right, here comes Miller, and they're showing him, it's getting down towards the end, he's got these, like, couple of laps just showing, and he's sliding it around, and every time he's up until he gets to that, like, turn, was it 7-8 where that river's going across the track?
Well, the river was at 4, heading on the back stretch to go to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another wet spot just before you go through that 7 and 8 had another river. You are correct. But then it's through that little dip, which leads you from, like, 8, 9 to 10. Through that dip there was dry, but you had to come through the river first to get there. And every time Miller went through there, it was just – he looked like he was getting ready to eject himself to the moon on that thing. Oh, he had it sideways, and he had it – it was massive.
He had that one where it was sideways, and then the one where he came up off the bike and kissed the windscreen. And I thought for sure he was done. The stones these guys have. He slid it, bounced his head off the windscreen, and then was back on the gas, like, immediately trying to save his lap. I was like, Jesus, dude, take a breather.
Well, he had to, because that was his run towards the flag. And if he didn't get back on it when he did, he would have never crossed the line to trip and get one more lap.
That's true. That's very true.
Because he messed up going through that dip there at 8, 9, 10, right?
Uh-huh.
And he was totally out of the seat. Totally lost time. He got back on as hard as he could, and he had like only – he made it with like only 10 seconds to spare to get another lap. Right. And, of course, he goes through, and then for whatever reason, he didn't appear in timing and scoring. So everybody is congratulating. Yeah, that was so strange. Like everybody was congratulating Pedrosa, like, oh, it's Pedrosa, Zarco, and Rabat. And all of a sudden, you're thinking – well, what about, I was thinking, well, what about Miller? I'm like, Miller made it.
I thought he crashed.
So I thought, I did too. I thought he had crashed or tossed it on the ground or something like that. All of a sudden, next thing you know, they've got their, you know, basically to turn 13, and they're like, Miller's up on everybody. Like, everybody's shocked that Miller's up on time. And then Miller comes through to steal the pole, which was one of the best laps by anybody anywhere at any time I've ever seen. He just most, total commitment, total insanity to get to that bike to do what he did.
I would have loved to see in that lap, because all we got to see was about 3 seconds of him coming out of the last chicane there to get the like and gets the pole. It was like, well, wait a minute. We watched all the laps where he didn't get it, and you guys cut away at the very end. And to watch Pedrosa on his cooldown lap, because like you said, they thought like, oh, he's got it. I think they were even so far in, they were giving stats back to like his last pull or how many pulls he's had or yada yada. They were doing that kind of thing. And then Jack just rips it. And the announcers are like, well, where the hell did that come from? Like, dude, that guy, you got to give Jack credit. He's done this in Assen now in tricky conditions. And now he's done it in Argentina in very tricky conditions. And I got to say, I kind of had forgotten how long Argentina's been on the circuit. I thought this was like Argentina's second year. Mm-mm. I was like, no, 4 years,
four
buddy.
4 years ago. No.
And it hasn't let us down yet as far as a good race. I got to say, Argentina's becoming a really good track for MotoGP as far as the show that we get to see. Getting there hurts a pain in the ass because it's out in the middle of nothing. But as far as what we get to see on TV and the racing that it produces, it's tops, man.
It is quite amazing what that track produces. And if you actually look at that track, it's kind of, it seems so basic.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, there's obviously some nuance to it, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's something, I've never ridden it. I can only look at a track map. I can only look at onboards, but there's some nuance to that track that produces great racing. And a lot of it I think has to do with, it's kind of like Assen. There's the really tight turn. There's a really tight turn with chicane where everybody's carrying speed to the last couple of corners. Well, that's perfect dive bomb territory, right? Open up the bomb bay doors and let it happen because you might as well give it a shot. Who knows? Because all you got to do is just hang on for, you know, ride the Bucking Bronco for 8 seconds to get to the final part that you're trying to get to.
Right. And it's got some neat undulations to it. It's really wide too. So you can drift and drift and drift, and it's just kind of built for motorcycling. And like you said, that turn 13, I took a good look at that because, like you said, I've never ridden it and I have limited track experience, but going to turn 13, cause it bends and then it really bends, you know, and you can ride on the outside and line yourself up for that perfect apex, or you can kind of run the tight line on the inside, depending on what you move. Man, if I was on that track, you know how many people would be running wide there? That corner is designed to suck you in bad.
Yes. And, that's the magic of it. That's the magic, though.
Yeah.
Right? Is that if you have a great chassis, a great bike, and great handling, and you got balls on the brakes, you can stuff it up the inside and park it. Because you're not really going to get the guy out, because you're going to take up the space the guy on the outside is going to come and want to occupy. Mm-hmm. And then all you got to do is just, you can stand him up and push him off, because you're going to carry the momentum because he's had to back off. You're now on the gas, and then you only got the last little kink there, and you're at the finish line.
Right. If only we could see that in action at some point during this weekend.
Oh, yes. Oh, I know. It'd be great, wouldn't it?
It would be great. It'd
be fantastic.
All right, let's get on to Moto3. Yes, racing. Okay. So, Marco Bezzecchi, you tell me how much you know about him. Ready? Go.
He's a badass in the rain because he took off and left everybody. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know, decisions, right?
Yep.
He's a youngster, yeah.
Yeah, but he's 19.
We get down to the beginning of the race, and our championship leader decides that after, you know, they had to have known this, right? Because he pulled in the pits. They weren't even ready. Like, how you think he really just called it out of nowhere to go in and grab slicks? Like, I thought for sure somebody would have gotten his ear and told him, like, hey, if you want to do it, come on in. We'll be ready for you. But they didn't look ready. So.
Nope. This one mystifies me because I cannot, you know, this is back to the belly pan issue, right? How do you let the bike out without the belly pan? How do you not have a conversation with your rider in tricky conditions such as these to say, well, here's our plan. If you might need slicks. If you feel like you need slicks, you come on in. We'll be sitting there. We'll be ready to go. We will put the slicks on the bike, and you can go back out with it.
Hey, you know what else this kind of thinks about this too. Sometimes this is where it's good to have a very strong crew chief for a younger guy, because he could have came out and said, listen, here's the plan. Go out your sighting lap. If you think you've got the grip, we're going to switch him on the grid or bring it back in for, you know, or switch it, rotate back out, go back around. If you don't, we'll leave it on the wets, but we're going to stick with that decision because we're going to see what else is going. Sometimes maybe, you know, that is instead of, I know sometimes, you know, the writer is always going to know best, but to leave it to a last minute decision like that, sometimes I think made it, especially for a championship contender. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if he'd have kept the reins on, and granted, he didn't have his best qualifying.
Nope.
But it would have kept him, he'd be right there. Right? With everybody else who's in the same boat. Yep. Okay, so you're going to score points. And everybody else that threw slicks on was kind of pretty much out the back except for Tony Albolino. But, you know, he's kind of been nowhere this season. He's not a championship contender, so let him run off if he does.
Yep.
But you should master your contenders to some point. Unless
that's
you
the
have
thing.
A...
If, yeah. you're a if you're in a championship like this, you cover your nearest rival. Don't do something different unless you know you can get away with it.
Right.
You know,
and it's got to be
that's only the second race of the year. I'll cut everybody some slack on this one, but I agree with you in the stance that someone needed to put a firm hand on Jorge Martin and say, this is what we're going to do. Here's right. the plan. Now that we all know the plan, let's execute the plan.
Right. And of course, the plan can be based off of everyone else's decisions too, right? You're going to sit there and sure. be like, all right, listen, Knetz, he's going to run dries. What do you want to do? Because we may be able to beat him out in the beginning and you're going to have to maintain the gap. Or do you want to jump on slicks with him and go head-to-head with him in the back and see if you can beat him and outrace that way? Whatever it is. But if – basically, right? Then again, yeah. he goes out there and he does this and he ends up lapping everybody or catching back up and gets first place. We, you know, we look like chumps. But in this instance, it wasn't the right decision.
Nope. Well, again, like you're saying, you cover the guy that's your nearest competitor, right? Or you watch and see what everybody else is doing. Well, guess what? That happens later on. We get an instance of everybody's monkey see, monkey do, right?
Right.
Which causes a whole other set of problems. But Moto 3, I mean, pretty much Bezzecchi just checked out on everybody.
Gone.
He was gone. He looked so good, though. He rode a great race. He rode inside of himself. He rode fine.
Controlled.
He really, really, yes, totally controlled. He was, you know, there. He had like 6 seconds or so on everybody as it goes through when he's there at the end. I mean, it was a great ride by him. You know, he had 5 seconds at the end or whatever. Now that 2, 3, 4 area of the race was kind of a little bit interesting because you sort of kind of where for a little bit, Canet would be out front. Then a little bit later, DG Antonio would find a way by and he'd be there for a little bit. And then, well, next thing you know, here, you know, come Bastianini at the end. He was there for the end. Nora Dean was kind of there on it. But everybody was really wanting to look and figure out what Martin was going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big thing was everybody was looking at the stopwatch, trying to figure out when the crossover point was going to happen. When was that magical crossover point when the slick is going to be faster than the rain tire?
And that came
the thing.
Way late in the race.
Way late. I give Martin props, man. He went out on a bike on slicks in conditions that by no means were ready for slicks at
well,
all.
Not only that, but the other guys that went on the slicks were 2 seconds a lap slower than him. So he was putting in the work on the slicks. I mean, that guy was riding, you know, hard on slicks and some sketchy. And this wasn't like Moto 2 when the patch was, you know, very visible. This was about the width of a tire through most of those corners.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to be that accurate on every single corner, on every single lap, to not toss it into the weeds as hard as he was pushing that front tire out there.
Yeah, I don't know how he kept it upright, to be honest with you.
No.
Let alone kept any kind of temperature in the front or the rear. I mean,
yeah.
and you have a Moto 3 bike. That is a light bike. It is a light chassis with small wheels. You are not going to put the energy through that chassis and through those wheels like you are on a Moto 2 bike, which is a way heavier piece of equipment, right?
Right.
Way heavier piece of equipment, or have the horsepower of a Moto GP bike.
Right. And these are bikes that are designed for corner speed. They're not designed to slam the brakes and punch it out where you're going to get heat that way either. No, it's, you know, you're designed to use the brakes a lot less and carry that corner speed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have the heat, well, yeah, that was that was impressive. So, you know, going through, you know, like I was talking about, you know, Binder, once again, this guy is having rough start to the year. Because he was back there as qualifying. What do they always say? When you qualify bad, it's kind of like the bad shit's going to happen to you because you're back there with other people that you don't normally race. And man, he got taken out by Toba hard.
Oh, yeah. That was a serious dive bomb move, and you know, Bender was helpless. It was nothing he could do. He was where he should have been, and you know, he got taken out. It happens.
It's just the luck too. There was like five riders there, and he gets picked off clean. Nobody else got effective, of course, outside of Toba. But I mean, Bender's race was just demolished by that.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of race, they're demolished. Back to, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm at a loss for words for the guy because I like his riding. I was really excited about him coming up through, and I feel bad that it's going south. It's Quartararo, I feel like, all over again. I mean, Bellega he flat out called it quits. He didn't even finish the race. He just pulled in.
Yeah. Something was seriously wrong there.
And this is concerning because
This
is his third year in Moto3, and it's been on the decline since the first year, which isn't good. He's with VR46. That seat, I mean, he's got to have a massive turnaround, and he still very much can. We could be singing his praises six races from now. Mm. But if he doesn't, man, his Moto3 career is in jeopardy. But not only that, dude, your GP circuit career. Because if you can't make it out of Moto3, oh, dude, Moto2's got so much talent now. I mean, look how long it took Luthi to crawl out of the Moto2 den just because, you know, maybe one or two. I mean, this year was an exceptional year for how many guys they brought up to GP. But, dude, look at GP and the talent that's there now. Man, you're lucky that one or two guys, I can't even honestly tell you. I mean, Pecco Bagnaia is going to be moving up because they saw they're grabbing that talent early. But outside of Pecco, I don't know who else is going to get the chance to go up unless Oliveira snags one of the KTM rides. And it's not for a lack of talent. It's just that everybody is so good that one ride makes a difference, right? Like, look, Baldessari, 10th to 15th last year, occasional higher than that. Now he's looking like championship, you know, contender right out the gate. Probably one of the strongest championship contenders because he's had the most consistent year, it almost seemed like so far. So you've got that to look forward with Baldessari, right?
Right.
Didn't even see that coming this year. I figured he'd have been, you know, a good rider, but now he's up there. Of course, Oliveira, we expected. Bagnaia, who didn't have a great qualifying whatsoever, and he didn't have a great race either. So that's in a mix-up. But yeah, if you don't make it out of that Moto3, you know, point is, I hope he gets it turned around because I really like the guy and how he handles himself on the track, but man, he's got to find that switch real quick.
And sooner rather than later, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So the end of the race I thought was interesting because you sort of finally got back to like the cut and thrusting that you expect to see out of a Moto3 race. Mm-hmm. Because there at the end, you know, then Foggia was down and then, you know, Masia went down because he banged into DJ Antonio.
Yeah, they kind of dropped like flies at the end.
Yeah, and it's like, well, all that was doing was helping Martin, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Everybody's falling off. Martin's kind of going up the leaderboard. Martin wound up actually becoming an 11th. It was interesting. It was with 12 laps to go that Martin was finally 2 seconds a lap quicker than Bezzecchi, all right? But that was over halfway through the race, and if you want to pull off that trick and be on slicks and go faster, it's got to be the first quarter of that race. You've got to be either equal to or slightly slower than Wets are at that point. And you've got to get to that changeover. So you've got three quarters of the race where you are now faster, but then you've got to get a whole heck of a lot faster because you're hoping the track's going to be drier for that final quarter. You want everybody to have shagged off their Wets and you to be on prime slicks at that point.
Right. And so that's something else that I wanted to bring up because we had talked about the strategy for Martin. Had they put the slicks on at the when they were sitting on the grid after the sliding lap, you got to figure he could have pestered for the win.
Easily.
Now, I don't know if he would have won it because, man, Bezzecchi had an all-time ride. But if you look at where he – because you got to remember, not only did he come into the pits, but when they took off, I don't think he came out of the pits until they were like in turn six. Yep. So he had already a half a lap. He was 53 seconds behind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you figure he starts the race, okay, obviously he's going to go back. Let's say it pushes him back to 20th. Big whoop, because he's still only 12 seconds behind the leader at that point, maybe. And then he starts his charge, right?
Yep. Look at this way. Martin finished 25 seconds behind Bezzecchi. And he was 53 seconds behind because he came out of the pit lane.
There you go.
If you give him, let's be kind and let's give him 15 seconds that he should have had that he didn't have, right? Mm-hmm. Take 15 seconds off of that, and he's only 10 seconds behind. That puts him in fifth.
Job done.
Easily job done. And yep. If not, I mean, and by that point, you could smell blood. He might have gotten there and been second, for all we know.
Should have, could have, would have. He also could have got knocked off by somebody else because he had to get on a slick surface with slick tires and goes off in the grass. Day done. mm-hmm. Oh, well. Anyway, Bezzecchi followed by Canet, who's having a strong start to the season. Although, man, did you see the FP1 incident? Was it FP1 or FP2 when him and, was it Yurchenko?
No, I didn't see that little incident?
All right, so Yurchenko's out there, and he's on the racing line. He's not going that fast. And so Canet comes out there, runs up on him, ruins his lap. Gets all kind of throwing up the hands and having a temper tantrum. It's like, bro, it's not even qualifying. Sit down, relax, right? Okay. No. He goes out, and he's like, all right, gets the red mist, and gets in there. Now, I'm betting this was turn 13. One of those corners sucks you in. He comes from a mile back, can't stop the bike. What's he do? His rear tire takes out not only Yurchenko's front, but takes himself out in the process as well. Now, what, you know, people were starting to sound like, okay, this was on purpose that he took him out. All right, I don't think he did it on purpose to take him out. I think he might have wanted to get up on there, ruffle his feathers a little bit, give him like the, hey, do you see me now kind of thing, where he gets in there and kind of lifts him up. And, you know, that happens all the time. But I don't think he wanted to wreck himself and Bezzecchi, because that can cause great injury to himself. That'd be silly. But, man, this is something where it makes you wonder, is this the mindset of Aaron Canet and his maturity level? And is this why he has trouble being consistent? Because once that red mist sets in, all bets are out the window. The focus is gone. It's about dicing up with the guy who just passed you instead of getting back in line and getting pulled towards the front, you know, and losing touch of the leaders. Is that what's been kind of going on? So I don't know. But anyway, he had a good race. Finished second. He had a pretty big battle there with DJ Antono and DJ Antonio and then Enea Bastianini. Adam Noradine. There is a little bit of a wet weather specialist coming up towards the front on the Malaysian there, making his and that's gotta be his first top five in quite some time. Well, we don't have Harry the Stat Man here, but I haven't seen Noradine's in the top five for quite some time. Probably since the last rain race we had, to be honest.
Probably.
Right. Finishing up in front of Alonso Lopez, Lorenzo De La Porta, Nico Antonelli. Good race by Nico. You know, another top 10 to bring home. Rodrigo, the homeboy there, on 9th. Antonio Abellino in 10th. Jorge Martin made it back up to 11th. All in all, after being, like you said, 53 seconds down to come back and be only 25 seconds behind, I couldn't have done it. So it still shows you that the man's got skills. Now we just got to make a better decision with the team, I think, can, you know, early days, right? Brush that one off, come back strong.
Yeah, look, Martin's going to run off 3, 4, 5, 6 of these wins in a row.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Moto2. Moto2. Let's hit the championship real quick. I'll buzz through it. Aaron Canet leading it, 40th, in front of Jorge Martin, who's 10 points behind in 30th. Marco Bezzecchi, with that great ride, is now sitting third in the championship on 27. Now, and then DJ Antonio, De La Porta, Antonelli, Rodrigo, Nordine, Bastianini, and Lopez are your top 10. We don't really get down to the rest. We need to get on to Moto2.
Yes, we do.
So, remember how I was talking about Moto2? I was talking about how... Yeah, remember, a whole 5 minutes ago?
Yeah, it's been a long time. A lot happens, okay? A lot happens in 5 minutes. We'll see that later.
Right, so when I was talking about it, when I was saying the amount of talent that's in Moto2 right now and how hard it is, just if you look at the top 10 in this race, oh, man, it's insane the talent we got. We'll get to the results in a minute, but, man, I at the first, I was really concerned with Oliveira in the very front, or in the very beginning of the race. It seemed like he was going to kind of slip his way back, because at KTM's, we were doing like the, oh no, like, are we doing the thing where they suck at the beginning of a race again and it takes them a while to come back? And then, what was it, Bender, he went out early too, right? He crashed, I think he lapped two.
Yeah,
or something
he crashed
like that.
Real early on. And
he ran into the back of Navarro, he plowed
in the back of Navarro, and I think that was one of those things where he did not expect Navarro to break when he did.
That was a tough one, because on the replays, Navarro had a bunch of bikes in front of him too, So yeah.
I think it was unsighted, and it was that whole constant, what they call that Constantina effect, yeah. where it all just kind of comes together. Oh, crap, because you were there in fifth, and bam, and you got nowhere right. to go. And he wound up having to, didn't it knock the exhaust out of the way on the bike?
Oh, yeah, he crushed the Varo's exhaust. His exhaust was running like a freaking Taylor made on a street bike. It was just hanging down underneath the middle of the bike there, and it was dragging. He had to pull it back in.
Yeah, because I think every time he went left, it was touching the ground.
Oh, yeah. So and that not just kind it. Of either. Like, he couldn't lean over. If he tried to go any further, I mean, he'd be...
Yeah, it would have took the wheels off the ground, yeah.
So that was a bummer for him. Because Navarro had a good weekend. He's a guy, people should be start paying attention to because... rookie season was, okay, but everyone forgets how strong of a Moto 3. Well, maybe not everyone forgets. I have forgotten how strong of a Moto 3 rider he is or was. And now Moto 2, slowly but surely, chipping away. And, considering the guys he has to go up against, your Pacinis, your Oliveras, your Marquezes, and he's making his way toward the front. Not long, we're going to see him there as a regular top five.
Mm-hmm. I think so. But what was interesting is that you were talking about Olivera. And the KTM, it's going to go backwards kind of a thing? Nope, it doesn't. It turns around and it goes right to the front.
Yep.
Because Oliveira suddenly, I think he was, that in the beginning, I kind of think he was riding within himself, riding within what he had, and he was looking at the track, the conditions, feeling it out, being smart, and he kind of takes himself to the front. It might have been short-lived because here comes Pacini riding like a madman and takes it away from him, but still, it was a good effort. By that part of it, for him to do that.
Here's a question. Do you think the KTMs, either maybe it's hard to say down on power in a spec motor class, where out and out, but I felt like every time they got that little backstretch, everybody, when they made their move on Oliveira, was into the brakes of the final turn because they could get, not the final turn, coming into the turn off the backstretch there, they
turn
seemed
five,
to be
at the end of the backstretch.
Yeah, every single time he got passed was right there because they would draft him and go by him. But anytime he'd be behind anybody, he could never get in their draft and get around him. So it looked like he was almost down on power. It was weird.
The two things I think of with it is that I think that the brakes are very unsettling to that chassis.
Mm.
Because when Oliveira has to really slam them on, let me put it this way. When it's dry and Oliveira's riding that bike hard, he can back the back end in, right? And he scrubs off the speed. But you can't really do that when it's raining, right? In these slick conditions. I mean, they're backing in a little bit, but not nearly to the extent that you're there. So that you could in the dry. So I think the chassis is not as stable under braking conditions as a Kalex is. That's what I think it is. So I think Oliveira kind of has to back off and roll into the corner a little bit because he can't really slam the brakes on. And again, it could be this is a WP suspension thing, right? Where, the forks bottom too quickly or something of that nature.
Well, since you mentioned that, because the Kalex is the aluminum chassis, but the KTM, they're running steel. And they're also running the trellis frame. So that's definitely going to be stiffer. So yeah, that's a good point to think about. We'll see when we get to Austin. There's the fast, couple S's there, but you know what I mean. It's not a super flowy track. We got a couple, there the front S's there, and then on the back side, the 12, 13, 14 kind of over there. But
one of the things that KTM frame does well is the edge grip.
When
they were coming out of, you've got that. Where is that at? Like you're in the 10, 10, 11, 12 to 13. It's a long curve through there, and you're on the side of the bike. Oliveira was eating everybody up on there. The edge grip on that bike is insane. Now, is that because you've got this little bit heavier trellis style frame, and it's got a little more bend to it because they've got it to flex in the right way? That whole mass dampener thing with Ducatis. So now it's bending and flexing a little bit with that rubber, so it grips and gives you that side edge that Oliveira was showing that he had tons of. But on the flip side, because you don't have the pizza box like Ducati has, when you go under the brakes, you get that bike a little too wiggly. It's one of those things where I want to be at Coda. I want to put my own eyes on it, and I'll be able to try to figure it out a little better just to see what's going on with it. But that's something to look at, something to think about.
All right, so championship leader Bagnaia, winner of the Qatar round, slipped back to 20th. That was not the start he wanted. I think he was... I almost wonder if he was in champion protection mode. He's like, you know what? I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling the conditions. Let me go out here, ride around, bring it home as best I can today. It looked to me like he was having a very cautious race.
Which is okay. That's fine. If you're not feeling it, use the Wayne Rainey theory. If you're not feeling it today, and if 9th is the best that you can do, or 10th or 12th is the best that you can do today in these conditions, take those points.
Right.
Understand where you were weak. Understand where your competitor was stronger than you. Work on your deficiency and come back again in 2 weeks' time and produce a better race.
Dude, do we ever figure out what happened to Sam Lowes? I mean, he was up there looking good right in the beginning. Speaking of, he went back.
Yeah, Lowes went backwards. I'm looking to see if I can remember where it was, where it happened to Lowes, but I don't know where it was. I think he ran wide and just lost the toe of everybody. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know, because he had like two big dropbacks, and then he kind of like, you know, sat back there in 13th and like just kind of hovered there. You know what that almost sounds like?
An electrical problem because it's wet and water's getting inside of all the electronics.
And yes, and exactly. And it caused his bike to freak out until it didn't anymore. And then he was able to kind of get back to where he was. That's what that almost seems like to me.
Yeah. There's always that possibility. Although, you know, again, that's a new team with a new KTM chassis. So you got to think that maybe they don't quite know what the factory KTM boys know.
It's true.
So there's always that possibility.
You know, outside of Oliveira, you know, they didn't have the strongest weekend. But then again, who did? I mean, the conditions were so hit and miss. Half the time you were starting on dries and going to wets, and the other half you were starting on wets and going to dry. And, you know, this was the first time they were going to be able to run the slicks for pretty much an entire session. So... Mm-hmm.
Nobody had been on slicks for the number of laps that they were on slicks when you were down to like 10 laps to go, 10 laps to go or so. That was the farthest anybody had ever been on a set of slicks. So no one had any idea where they were going
to
be.
Yeah, we got to see that towards the end because Oliveira and Baldessari, they looked like their tires had pretty much started to run off.
Yeah,
Baldessari, he went back first, right? He was in that battle with Pacini and them, and he went back first. And then Oliveira looked like he lost it, kind of came back up a little bit, but then I think he bought it. He was like, nope, I'm not going to go up there because, man, here we go. Once again, Xavi freaking Virge. Dude, turn 6.
Mm-hmm.
Watching that shot, and when we get to Alex Rins in MotoGP 2, but, man, Virge was going around that bike, was so sideways, and that tire was just smoking around that tire.
Oh,
he could have it
awesome.
Smoking in the rain if he wanted to, man. That thing was just amazing to watch, and... You know what? As impressive as Virge was, because he had that little slip up in the beginning where he kind of dinked a donk and fell back, you know, a couple positions, and he had to claw his way back up to those guys. Man, Pacini, right at the end, he had to keep him back there and keep the pressure, and he ended up setting the fastest lap on his last lap. Man, that's doing it right there. That's a championship ride.
Yep, there's no question about that. He's definitely had a championship ride, but... I think this race is so crazy that it could have been any one of these guys could have won it.
For sure.
It was whose turn was it to be out front when the checkered flag fall?
Pretty much.
That was pretty much what it came down to. You know, a shout out to Juan Mir, the Moto3 champion, right, of last year.
Oh, he's getting fast.
He's getting fast quick. He's getting real fast real quick. He was running some fast laps on very tricky conditions, and basically you were seeing the talent of that kid. And that kid's got some immense amount of talent.
Because he was setting faster laps than the leaders for like the last five.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the last lap, and the last two laps when Virge and Pacini were going at it. But there was a chunk where he was faster than the guys up front for sure.
Yes, for a big chunk of it, he was faster than those guys up front. And
yeah.
It's not a matter of if he gets on the podium. It's a question of when is he going to get on the podium with that bike. Which is really going to smoke Marquez's brain. Because this is Marquez's make or break year. Right?
For sure.
Would you agree on that?
Yeah, that's 100% agree on that. He has to.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, championship or bust, really. If he's going to move up.
No. It's not championship or bust, okay? It is strong championship challenge or bust.
Well, I think he's going to. For him to move up to GP, he's got to win.
Where's he going
to
go? There's no spot. There's no room at the end. If I'm a team manager in MotoGP, there's nobody I would want to take off the Moto2 grid right now except for Oliveira. And I got a spot for him because I own KTM.
Well, Pecco's coming up. He's going to Pramac. He's already got his contract.
He's going to mount something. Now, look, it's a bad race. It's a bad set of conditions. Let's, you know, again, second race of the year, benefit of the doubt, Marquez finishes fifth.
But
not bad.
He was a smart not fifth, bad. Though, because he a knew he didn't fifth, have the bike right. to win. He didn't crash it, and that's
he
what
was
Marquez
only five seconds
before.
Behind. I mean, that's not like he was. It's not the thing of it is, he was noticeably absent from the race, right? Because nothing was happening. It just wasn't happening around him or wasn't happening.
Yeah, he was in that top like four for a little while. Then he kind of he ran wide, I think, in one of the corners. And and then he was back there. Well, that's the thing. He was back there with Chave for a little while. And Chave, once he kind of front, he kind of built the gap and chased the boys down. But then again, this is Vierge wanting the win. Marquez wanting the championship. That's the difference there. Because Marquez is like, he could have went out there and probably ran just as fast as Chave, but maybe crashed. Okay, now he's got no points. But you know who he did beat? He beat Bagnaia. So there you go, right? Yep. Bassini was pretty... Bassini, Oliveira, well, now Baldessari too. But they're all right there in front of him. So not a bad race at all.
Nope. So let's look at how everybody finished real quick, right? Bassini wins it. Chavez second. Oliveira's third on the podium. Baldessari, Marquez. Remy Gardner on the Tech 3. Never had a mention about him. But that was a strong ride. And that's about the farthest I've seen a Tech 3 bike up in a long time, and that's going to be good for him. Juan Mir was in 7th, Agatar was 8th, Bagnaia 9th, and Marshall Schroeder was 10th. But as the important part goes, it is all about the championship point standings, correct? So that puts Pacini on top with 38 points. Baldessari is 2nd with 33 points. Bagnaia is there at 32 points. It's an all-Italian podium in this, right? Then Chave bounces in there. Oliveira is there. And then Marquez is in 6th. So he's 27 points. So that you're talking, he's already 11 down. But do you see Pacini as a threat? No, I personally don't. I could be wrong. But the person who I'm worried about in that top is possibly Bagnaia, Oliveira. But Marquez is right by Oliveira, and Bagnaia is only, you know, 6 points ahead of him. So
you may not see Pacini as a threat.
I do
you
got to
remember
Pacini's
how much of a threat he was at the end of last year after going nil for nil in the first two races of last year. So he's already leading the championship at a much – or he's in the championship leading. So he's in a way better position than he was at this time last year. And if he carries form, oh, he's definitely going to be in contention for that championship. Mm-mm. But, hey, if we could take an 11-point spread with the top six of all the big players, if we can hold that over – till about with about five races to go, I'll be a happy man to watch that come down to the end. That'll be exciting with those boys.
It's
there.
early days, and anything can happen. But
right,
yeah.
Give me those riders though. That's who I want to see. The thing I like about Moto2 this year, outside of maybe Brad Binder being a little further back than I thought he would be, but those top six guys in the championship are the top six guys I want to see duke it out all year long. It's already looking to be a hell of a year in Moto2.
Oh, it's going to be an amazing year in Moto2.
Speaking of amazing years, are we finally going
to
get to this?
Let's get to this
after
race.
An hour of delaying the inevitable of what everybody wants to hear, MotoGP.
MotoGP.
So let's see. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start? Let's get to the point where Sunday, once again, we finish up the Moto2 race. The track is drying. They did the whole race on slicks, and right in between the races, what freaking happens? It starts to rain, but not heavy enough to make the track like, oh man, we need wets, but heavy enough to be like, oh shit, we can't run slicks.
Right.
Or can we?
But, well, no, here's the key is Moto, the directors of the race, the stewards of the race declared the race wet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's critical because that means you can do whatever you really want to do. You can be on slicks, you could be on wets, you could bike change. It was everything was open in there, right? So as they go out and they're doing that first reconnaissance lap to get back to the grid, we get there and we've got Miller on pole, but correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't they changing tires right then as soon as Miller got to that point?
You know, I don't remember if he went on a six. I remember they were messing around with the
They
front
were messing
of that
around
bike.
With the bike. Now whether they were changing tires or just playing with tire warmers
or changing the brake guards or
whatever
it is to keep them
They
warm.
Were doing
yeah.
something. The question that I don't have a definitive answer for, as well as asking you, did Miller leave the pits on the siding lap and do it on wets and then say, guys, I want slicks, and they put slicks on the bike? Either way, it doesn't really matter. But Miller is on slicks. Everybody else is on wets.
Well, the thing is, too, is that some riders went out on slicks, like Rossi, came back in after the siding lap, jumped on the wet bike, and then went back out again.
Mm-hmm. Because you got so much time to be able to get there and get back to that, to the grid.
Right.
But this is where now you're into where the chaos now begins, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've got to the point where the clock's ticking down. And from what I understand, when they get to 3 minutes before the warm-up lap, that's when the mechanics have to basically leave the bikes alone.
Yeah,
they can't touch them. You're locked in. Whatever you've got, you have to be with. Well, the problem was that just shortly before that, everybody realizes what Miller has done.
And the rain has stopped, and it got that like humid heat that came out and just started drying the track really rapidly, too.
Yeah. So everybody besides Miller is on wets, and everybody decides that's wrong. So now there's this scramble going on where everybody's trying to get to a bike that has slicks.
Well, it was like the first to blink, right? The first person that did it was like the back rows. It was like, okay, the guys in the back had nothing to lose. They went to slicks.
Right.
And once it kind of got up to a team that mattered, it seemed like everyone's like, ah, shit, we got to do it. And then, like you said, they make the mad dash to the pits.
Right. So now total chaos has ensued at this point, right? Because literally Miller is the only person sitting on the grid waiting to go. And there's nobody else there. And suddenly we've got race direction saying, whoa, race start delayed. They played their trump card. There are two trump cards in all of MotoGP. One is a safety card because no one is ever going to say, well, that wasn't safe. Oh, you're against safety. Nope, never happened. The other trump card is, you know, essentially like cost containment or, you know, keeping the racing relative, you know, standardized electronics, et cetera, right? Those are the two. So race direction throws down a trump card. It's a safety issue because we can't have everybody starting from the pit lane.
No, we did that, once again, to bring up Session Ring, two years ago?
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah, and we had, that was only, what, eight riders?
Only eight.
Started from the pits.
On a much more narrow pit lane than what you have in Argentina, by the way.
Right. Yeah. That was chaos. And it's super unsafe. And now you're going to have 22 guys doing this? No way. It had to be absolute right call to delay it because you don't want guys rushing back there half-assed it. Someone misses a wheel nut.
Poor belly pan.
Guys are throwing bikes around. People are getting ran over. You don't want an F1 situation. See, I worked that in there.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
But, you know, they had a start. Now comes a tricky bit. How do you punish everybody else without punishing Jack Miller, right? Because to the T, the rule has been followed. You guys go to the back of the grid. Well, the back of the grid, the next guy goes, the next, and then it moves forward. So what were they going to do? Well, they had a nice little discussion there. I would love, man. So, oh, you know, like in the NFL, we do the mic'd up. You know, you get to hear the coaches talk. Maybe not during that moment, but maybe like, you know, next year we can actually hear the conversation that went down out there to find out what exactly were we talking about. Because there was a lot of hand gesturing and and of course, you know, all the team bosses. So you're sitting there going, okay, what are we going to do? And so they end up just, there was some still confusion. They regrid everyone starting from the back going forward. And they started putting numbers out, but then they started trying to do the thing where they were like putting the numbers out in which they thought the bikes came off the track. And then they started changing that up again. So, you know what? To be honest, I'm not even sure if do we eventually just shuffle the grid back four rows, but they kept the qualifying order, or did they
actually
shuffle them?
That is how I understood it. I understood that. You know, here was the deal. They claim that this was a part of a procedure that they had developed. If this were to happen again after the Saxon Ring thing, right? Uh-huh. Their whole concept was, well, we're going to do this. We're going to have time, let everybody change all the bikes, all the tires, and we'll regrid ourselves back up again. Well, and that's what they were thinking, right? Well, the problem was Miller never went anywhere. And that was a scenario that they did not think through because now it was like, well, wait a second. If we let everybody come back on the grid with slicks, Miller's going to be totally pissed and his team's going to be pissed because they are not, their advantage that they would have had starting on slicks has been eroded to where it's gone, right?
They were lucky it was just Miller. What if it was seven bikes or exactly. two rows of bikes, right?
Exactly.
Now you're going to take away all these guys' advantages. Now how the hell are you going to move everyone to the back and have these eight guys up front? Because and what is the – they have to be – there's a delta time when they come in and change the bikes, right? It's like 36 seconds they have to be within the pit lane or something like that. So that 36 seconds, Jack is never going to have back. Can you imagine if they drop the flag, Jack goes out for 36 seconds, then they drop the second flag? Dude, that race isn't even happening. We're not even talking about the race the same way.
What they were trying to do is they were trying to regrid in the order in which people left the grid. So if you're the first one to leave, you would be the first one back to the grid. And they were trying to go down that way. But then they kind of realized, wait a minute, if we go down with that logic, we're going to wind up with, A, no one knows exactly who left when and where. But the other problem is we don't have enough spaces on the grid painted to put everybody back where it's supposed to be. So they called a halt. They came back to it and said, look, here's what we can do. We'll put everybody back into the order in which they qualify because that's the only order that we know is valid because we don't have a bunch of people watching what's going on, right? And then, okay, well, we have to make it somewhat fair for Miller. So we're going to have five blank rows because that's how many rows we can actually push everybody back and still start the race and have everybody in a grid spot. So that's what happens. That's how the grid winds up being formed.
Given the situation, given the unknowns, given the time restraints, given everything that was going on, I don't know if there was anything else they could have done. That was not easy. And I saw Twitter just giving MotoGP a bunch of shit for this and what they had to do. And I got to say, I agreed with one of our own co-hosts, Lynn, who said, and I may get this quote wrong, but he said, people who have never done anything hard in their life will think everything is easy. And I thought that was perfect an assumption of what was going on. Like, dude, you know how hard it was to get that to all race and to get that decision like in 10 minutes. Like, no, make this happen.
Mike Webb did the right thing. He came out of the box. He got down on the grid. He was talking with the IRTA officials, and they came to the decision, this is what we're going to do. This is the fairest thing that we can do, and I applaud it. I applaud everything Race Direction did up to this point.
Now we get out, and we finally get our warm-up lap.
Right.
And we're good to go, right? We're going to start this race. It's a little weird. Now we're going to start. Nothing else can happen. And then Marquez comes along, kills it. Now, here's another thing. Now, he raised his hand at first, which is what you're supposed to do. Now, if you raise your hand, to my understanding, you're supposed to wait, and they'll come get you and pull you off to the pits, right? That's
correct.
What's supposed to happen.
That's supposed to
and
happen.
He took matters into his own hands and started his own bike and then went backwards on the track, which even at his stance, it was a big, big no-no. I gotta say, the right through penalty, he's lucky he just didn't get freaking black flagged.
Okay, this is where I blame Race Direction right here. Okay, okay, number one, I am not defending Marquez's actions. Number one, it clearly states in the rules that if you have a problem with your bike, you put your hands up, we will come, we will assist you, get you off the grid, get you into, because there's gaps in the pit lane wall there, right?
Right.
We'll get you off, we'll get you into the pit, you can refire your bike, and you will start from pit lane. That's what should have happened, right? Race Direction is dealing with the chaos of everything else because now everybody's shifted because nobody's really paying attention because we get this large gap back to Jack Miller, right? So everybody's all running around. Now, Marquez doesn't get the help that he needs right away. Now, I've been in this situation where your bike fails. I've fouled spark plugs, dirt track, and whatnot. Your mind is not the clearest thing in the world because only thing you're thinking about, I need to make this motorcycle run, period.
Right.
I've got to get it started, okay? The rule book isn't in Marquez's head, and I'm guarantee you he's never read the freaking rule book, all right? So basically, he does what he feels like he needs to do to get the bike going. Props to him for bump starting his own bike and getting it to run.
Right.
Bad on you for going backwards around the track. Now, the big question is, if Marquez would have had the bike running and walked it backwards with the bike pointing forwards, would he have violated the you're going backwards on the racetrack conundrum? Now, Marquez says that he got mixed signals from the IRTA officials, one saying, no, you got to get off, one giving a thumbs up, other things happening. That is where I'm going to take aim at Race Direction in this case, okay? Because if this is wrong, If what Marquez did is wrong, and he really should be starting from the pit lane, the race should not have started. You have to walk.
This is what I'm talking about.
You got to walk up to Marquez, stand in front of his bike, get underneath the ear of his helmet, and tell him, hey, look, you need to take your bike off the track. We're going to get you through the pit lane. You need to go to the end of the pit lane road, and you will be allowed to start after everybody else is gone. But they don't do that.
They should have went out through the red flag, told everybody one more sighting lap.
Exactly.
Because they need to get them going. They can't have them sitting there, right?
Right.
So they send them all back around and they pull Marquez off. They said, they tell him, you know, they can send it on his dash now. That's the lovely thing about the communication. They said, box, 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 bring him in, boom, light it up. But you know, chaos and confusion are a fucking pain in the ass.
Right.
When all that's going on after finally solving what seemed like an eternity of getting just people on the grid. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are definitely, you know, like we said, it's early days. It's early days for everybody. So I'm pretty sure they've already had the meeting on what to do should these things happen again. And then considering what we've had for the last three seasons when it comes to MotoGP, anything's going to happen. Anything is possible. So who knows? We'll get it figured out.
I'm going to lay that one's on race direction.
Yeah.
Okay. So Marquez goes back to his spot and we go green. Everybody takes off. Miller's got the lead, but the world's greatest hole shot because there's nobody around him anyway, right?
Right.
So the next thing you see is basically before you get to the end of the first lap, you have Marquez basically at the front or very, very near the front, right? He had basically caught Miller, and I think he wound up passing him on the front stretch just shortly after they crossed the start-finish line, to which shortly thereafter, Marquez gets the signal on his dash that, hey, you have a ride-through penalty now because you went backwards on the track. Oh, just when you think things don't get any more wild, that happens. So Marquez peels off to the pits, does his ride-through penalty, and rejoins the race. Now he's been dropped to the very back of the pack, which would have been where he would have been if he had started from the pit lane like he was supposed to. So I guess now we finally have everything back to where things should be. Well, let's just run the race, right?
Right. So this is where I was texting my buddy. Now, I've got a friend. He just started watching MotoGP about halfway through last year. What a time to jump in, huh? Mm-hmm. So he gets in, and I text him. I said, and he goes, man, this is crazy. Marquez has got it right there. I said, yeah, now watch him do work. And I said, if there's one guy that's going to do some crazy shit, it's going to be Marquez coming through the pack. I didn't know it was going to be as crazy as he got. He comes in and runs up in the, you know, Aleix Espargaró, who had an interesting take at the end of the race. He was pissed about Marquez hitting him, but he was also pissed because it was a title contender that only bothered Marquez because Petrucci ran him all up in the side of Aleix too. We put a nice picture of that, like Petrucci's front wheels inside of Aleix's leg. It's like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he did run him off the track. So, bit of a as one of my favorite Britishes and little argy bargy going on back there. But yeah, so he's coming through doing crazy things.
When we talk about Marquez going on his pass on Aleix, because after that after he does that, race direction says, well, you've got to give the place back. Okay, again, good call by race direction, right? I'm 100% behind that one because, yeah, that was a bit much. But, and I don't want to sound like I'm defending Marquez, but he's not used to riding with Aleix and the Aprilias and the guys at the back of the pack. I think we can agree on that. He didn't realize how much slower Aleix was really going. And all Marquez is wanting to do, he's got a bit of the nerves going because now he's been through the stalled bike. He's now been through a ride through. So he's like, oh, I've got to at least get back to Dovi because he's my championship rival. So he's going to try to go through the pack like crap through a goose, but he can't because Aleix is in the way at that time. And does he bunt him? Yeah. Does he hit him? Yeah. Was it careless? A little bit, right? Did it warrant a drop of position? Yep, sure did. Right call, right thing. So now he's got to do it all over again, right?
Right. And so, you know, just to kind of take a time from Marquez, we'll get back to him. You know, this was going on all over the track. I mean, like I said, Petrucci was running in Aleix Espargaró. Mm-hmm. And then let's not forget how Zarco miffed up the corner, ran at Pedrosa, sent him out in the slippery stuff. And then Pedrosa grabbed a handful of gas, and then he went to the moon.
Yep.
And, oh, man, when he landed, I was just thinking, like, oh, please don't be hurt. I thought Pedrosa's season was done right there. Another collarbone, something.
I thought he broke his right wrist.
And he landed just like the correct way to roll. Like his momentum, the way he landed, just kind of hit. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it didn't feel great, but out of the way he landed was probably one of the better ways that you could, where your momentum is already taking you back around and you kind of that bump and roll instead of doing the javelin thing into the ground. So he was relatively unharmed in that crash, but, you know, that was, you know, even Zarco was doing that. And Zarco's, you know, doesn't have the greatest reputation on that stuff either. I mean, go back to Coda last year when he ran Rossi, you know, a little underneath, but it was super tricky conditions because just like, you know, we were talking about earlier where the dry patch was much wider because of Moto 2 being on the track, mm-hmm. but after the rain, it narrowed back down. You get off that patch just the littlest bit, especially early days when those tires are still coming up to temperature. You know, you grab a little too much brake, and we're going back to that thing you were talking about where the brakes are more powerful than the traction, and now you're running into that whole issue. It's like, okay, then how many times do you see guys, which, by the way, shows you the skill of a MotoGP rider, they were washing the front end and catching it. They knew to wash. Like, they were almost, like, pushing it to find the wash and then pick it up. It's like, dude, seriously, how many times can you crash in one turn on purpose and keep it going? Me? I'm in a yard sale out there crying about how I wrecked my bike for the seventh time. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. So then, you know, Marquez, and the other thing is too, when he had to give up that one position, it was kind of like, well, which position are you talking about? Because by the time he got the notification, he already gone by like three more people.
Let's kind of go back to the front and what's happening at the front of the race, right? Because mm-hmm. at the front, you basically have Rins, you've got Zarco is there, you've got Miller, and they're kind of having a little back and forth, and sort of Crutchlow has kind of worked his way into the mix. And
Crutchlow was being the smart man, we'll find out later.
Right. It's a really good race. Because
really
these guys are swapping it around. Miller's leading for a little bit, then Rins goes to the front, then Miller goes back in front, and then, you know, Crutchlow kind of sneaks up into third, to then to second, then he kind of falls back a little bit more, and it's just, you know, like you said, through turn six, Rins on the Suzuki was just lighting that back end up.
Oh, man, that was beautiful.
Beautiful, man. That was just sweet the whole way through.
We finally got to see the battle that I thought was going to take place last year until Rins got hurt, but I've been wanting to see the Rins versus Zarco carry that up from Moto 2, and because it always seems like, you know, Zarco kind of got burnt by the Suzuki team when they went with Rins, and he was supposed to do the whole Suzuka, and then he backed out of doing the Suzuka after that was announced, and now we get to see. Then it was down to who's going to get there. I was thinking, who was going to get the first win? Rins? Or Zarco? Rins or Zarco? Rins or Zarco? I was like, oh, Miller's already got one. He can kind of shuffle back, whatever. But Cal's got two. Like, all right, none of these guys have won a lot. This is going to be a hard-fought battle. Man, it was.
Oh, it was some great racing. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's absent all the, quote, stars or the aliens, but it's damn good race. I'll take that any day of the week, right?
Yep.
It was amazing racing by these guys on very tricky conditions and very sketchy conditions. The amazing thing is that while all this is going up front, everybody's talking about Marquez because the guy is turning in laps that are just absolutely amazing. He is like a second and a half faster than anyone on the track.
I don't understand how that works either, by the way.
This goes back to like the 2003 Valentino Rossi Phillip Island penalty thing, right? Where Rossi passes under a yellow flag. He basically just checks out from everybody on that five-cylinder Honda. And you saw Valentino Rossi at his prime, at the zenith of his powers, right? Basically go out there on a bike that was built and tuned and perfect for him, and he laid decimated the entire field and made everybody else look stupid. The same thing was happening with Marquez because he's flying on the thing. It doesn't matter who you are. He's going past everybody like they've thrown the boat anchor out and put it in neutral. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal in the middle section how good Marquez was on a track that was sketchy, and it just didn't seem to bug him. It was like he was in this zone of...
That's how he likes it.
Yeah, he was like in this zone of like a zen state of total oneness with the whole bike. It was phenomenal to watch, and they showed a bit of it, which was great. I guess we got to get to the Rossi part of this because this is where this is going. Here comes Marquez. He's now got himself up. He's gone blown past Dovizioso, right? I mean, literally, he made Dovizioso look like he had the anchor, the Ducati in neutral, and was actually trying to find reverse in it because he just flew past him like,
There was no challenge.
There was zero. I mean, Dovi had zero for him. So that right there, at that point, Marquez should have been like, that's enough.
That was demoralizing for Dovizioso,
exactly. At that point, that's enough for Marquez to have done. But no, Marquez unplugs his brain and decides, well, hey, I could potentially get to fifth, maybe even the podium. So he still is just hauling butt on that bike. Amazing ride. But he gets to the Yamahas, which are in that fifth, sixth area of the race. And the first one he's got to pass is Rossi.
Man, and the thing is, too, he ran Rossi down in a short gap. And this is where the problem is. This is the last lap and for the win between him and Rossi. You kind of look at this different. But the fact that he could have passed him with ease within the next two or three corners, it was a completely unnecessary move. And he knows, because it's the exact same corner he did this shit with the Leish, that he needs to ease up going into this corner, because this might happen. And this is 13. This is what I'm talking about. This is that it sucks you in, because it has that slight bend, and then it does that decreasing radius shit where it turns in. So you've got this, you've got two different lines. You've got the take it wide and, you know, bring it in, swoop out. Or you've got to run it narrow, motocross style, you know, stick it underneath and power out, right? Mm-hmm. And then of course, we all saw it happen. He runs into Rossi, which I don't know how Rossi kept it up.
He didn't run into Rossi. He plowed into Rossi.
Yes, he used him as a berm. Straight. Like, literally, yeah, he wouldn't have slowed down as much if he wasn't there. You could see the transfer energy between the two bikes when he collided into him. Somehow, you know, Rossi just, you know, needed 6 more inches of asphalt. He would have stayed on the bike. Completely unnecessary. And of course, you know, wet grass, slick tires, anyone knows what that result is. You can be the 9 times MotoGP champion. You still, no one's going to make that. Right. And then that happens, and there was 2 things I thought at the same time. It was, oh man, that was unnecessary. And the second thought was, oh shit, now we got to talk about this for at least the next 8 races. Mm-hmm. And it completely wiped out what was going on in the front. The race was the best race we've seen in quite some time. And I'm talking like the Dovizioso Marquez races from last year and the, you know, the first race in Qatar, those are great. But dude, these are all unknown, you know, these guys haven't raced at the front together ever. Crutzlow, Vinales, Rins, and Miller. Mm-hmm. Variations of them have been up front, but not that group together where it was those guys, and they were duking it out. It was down to them making mistakes. They were so evenly matched. Whenever, like, when Miller would fuck up and he ran off to the back and kind of caused his race.
Yeah, he fell off because he ran wide in turn one and then he ran wide again. So he kind of left. It was, you know, even Miller admitted, well, you know, discretion's the better part of valor.
How many times do we see Rins, and by the way, the Suzuki's got no problem with power, but how many times do we see Rins pass everybody going on fire and he, you know, couldn't hit his braking marker, get sucked in, and blow it, right? And then Wiley Cal sitting back there. Now, there's the difference between someone who's won a GP race and someone who hasn't. Because he sat back there, nursed his tires just enough and let the boys have at it to when it was time to punch it through with about 4 laps to go. Man, Cal came through for the win there. You know, I was telling you, like, before we got on the show, I literally had to take a, I had to get up and get a couple laps in the house to kind of calm down, because just the drama, then it just even continued after the race, that whole, you know, going down and talking. We'll talk about that later, but
yeah,
just the excitement of the race and why not? Because that was the first race I think we've seen in quite some time where, man, with 10 laps to go, I didn't know who the hell was going to win.
I didn't either. That was what was so magical about it. And that's what's disappointing, because those guys had a race that was absolutely magical.
Right.
Like, you did not know. It could have been Rins who won. It could have been Zarco could have won, right? Or Cal could have won, you know. And then Cal gets in. He's like, yeah, well, I knew I had it. It was only Mayor Marquez was going to win this race. I'm like, well, that's a ballsy statement considering Zarco standing
that's
there.
That's a Cal statement.
That I know, but that's what you love statement. About Cal, right? I mean, the fact that he's just going to tell you what he thinks and throw it out there.
He won, so he's not wrong.
Exactly. You know what? You can back that shit up if you do that, right?
Right?
So you can. You did. Bravo to you, sir. But it was phenomenal racing. I agree with you. Phenomenal racing. It's
right.
It's now all the political stuff that happens now here on the fallout. So let's go back to the incident itself with Marquez and Rossi. From my take on it, Marquez was there. I heard there were people talking about, you know, Twitter erupted again. People were talking about it was dangerous, it was reckless, it was irresponsible. Okay, was it dangerous? Okay, motorcycle racing is dangerous.
Right.
So I don't think if you were going to say it's dangerous, then that means you intentionally want it to do harm to someone. Okay, I do not think that Marquez wanted to have any kind of harm to anybody. So no, it's not dangerous, people. That's the first thing.
He doesn't want to run people off the track. He wants to win, and yes, sometimes that comes at the extent of running people off the track.
Correct. Was it irresponsible?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Was it reckless? Damn straight. Is it right. Irresponsible? Hell yeah. But the thing of it was is that now you have the problem of what race direction is going to do. There was was there 10 to go, roughly, something close to that, would you say, when he came after Rossi?
10 or less. 10
okay.
or less.
Okay, let's say way. It's 10 or less, right? They never came up with a decision to give Marquez a 30-second penalty till after the race finished. If I'm Mike Webb, right? As soon as that second move that Marquez makes on Rossi happens, I give him a black flag and
it's
I put him in the
pits. It's got to be a black flag, right? Because
it's got to be.
It's got to be.
You are setting the precedent, Mike. You are setting the precedent that this kind of shit is going to be tolerated.
Yeah.
No.
No.
And no.
And what is that 30-second penalty garbage at the end anyway?
Because that's what a pit lane ride through was going to be. A pit lane ride through was going to be about 30 seconds. And that's what they were looking at. Because there's nothing else in the rules they could have given him.
Nah, you got to stomp that fire out.
Exactly.
That is a black flag.
That is a black
flag. And
yes,
you're starting from the back of the grid at the next race.
He still might
which
be.
Might not solve the problem, actually.
That might be worse. Because if you tell him, no, you're starting from the back of the grid, that could be just even worse, right?
Right.
Okay. So then the political part of this happens. After the race, you see Marquez walk down and try to talk to Rossi afterwards.
Which, kudos to him. And he knew he was going in to get his head bit off.
But he had that smile on his face that Marquez always has. Did you see the smirk on his face?
Yeah, that could be nerves too. Or who? That's
it. Could have been
that's
the nervous
a tough thing.
But here's the really bad thing: does he bring the Japanese guys, the head of the show, down there as an olive branch of like, hey, look, I know I really screwed this one up? No, he brings the most decisive person in the pit lane. He brings Alberto Puig with him.
Yeah,
oh my
I don't
God.
Know if he brought Alberto or Alberto went and tagged along, because I feel like he's the kind of guy that
like,
wants to be in the mix.
You know? So then Uccio basically just tells you, hey, get the blank out of here, is pretty much what happened there. And Rossi's not going to talk about it, okay?
Uccio have probably had the best decision. Don't let this turn into something stupid. Let this just like, listen, dude, tempers are hot.
Go away.
You know, we know you messed up. Just go. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best thing. Why are we going to sit here? All the cameras, all the attention. You go in there, someone says something stupid, someone gets in someone's face. That does nothing for... This isn't NASCAR, okay? We're not trying to have that kind of championship.
Nope.
Right? It's already bad enough the way it looks after the whole weekend. We don't need that kind of shit going on. So I think that was a good move to kind of be like, listen, it's over. Go away. We understand, but you know what you did. And we're not happy, so piss off.
Exactly. But then Rossi... has to be Rossi, and he says what Marquez has done to the sport is dangerous. Okay, number
no,
one.
No, he's destroying the sport.
He's destroying the sport because he's dangerous.
Come on.
Okay, no.
Come on.
All right, here we
all
go.
All right, let's go ask Sergio Germana how he feels about that.
Exactly, 2005. Exactly. Those in glass houses should not throw stones.
For
you
real.
Want to talk about 2005 with Sete, right? What was the build-up to that? Rossi was doing burnouts with a scooter on the track at Qatar, because he wanted a better hole shot, right? Jebernow's team called him on it. Hey, that's against the rules. And Rossi had to go to the back of the grid to start the race, right? After which, Rossi proclaims publicly, well, that's the last race that Jebernow's ever going to win. Well, Jebernow's got the best of him at Jerez until the last lap, and Rossi dive bombs him just to keep his word and literally clots him. I mean, he did what Marquez did to him, right? There's no difference in that at all, except for Rossi is now tempered by age. And that is the last great gasp of a man who has lost his ability to be the king.
And had this been anybody else.
Exactly. Rossi would have never said
it. That was what I was thinking too. Like, fuck, man, if that could have been anybody. Well, maybe not Zarco, he'd been pissed, but or Lorenzo. But anybody else, just like, dude, it'd have been like, well, shit, it happens. And he probably would have been pissed and said something. But this was more of like, yes, but a dig too. Like an extra.
Oh, yeah. It was put the knife in and twist, right? Okay, so The other thing about this one is that go back to 2015 Sepang, right? What does Rossi do? He takes Marquez off, right? Now, here's the here's a difference, and I don't the difference to me is if you look at what Marquez did, that was a red mist riding. I want to win mentality, right?
So, and if the state too, because if you go back and watch, he does lose the front on the brakes on the wet shit going.
It was an honest mistake. Yeah. It was an honest mistake. Yeah, you know what? Look, I thought, you know, he Ayrton Senna'd him, because it's the only way I can give it to you in a Formula One essence, right? Ayrton Senna said, if there's a gap and you don't go for it, you're not a racer. Marquez saw the gap because we talked about 13 gives you that ability to be sucked in there, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens? Marquez thinks there's a gap. Rossi closes it. He goes for more brake, locks it up, tucks the front, lets off the brake, and smashes into Rossi. That part of it is a racing incident. In itself, that is a drop of position and go back by Rossi again, but because he had taken out Aleix in the same spot with the same way, you got to give him a harsher penalty because now it's becoming reckless because you just did the same thing twice.
Right, you're not learning.
You're not. You haven't learned your lesson.
And you're not. And you're not respecting the other guys out there when you do that kind of crap.
Exactly. But what did Rossi do to Marquez in 2015 at Sepang? Rossi ran Marquez off, but Rossi did something in my mind that was very deliberate. Yeah, Rossi was mad. He had the red mist up because Marquez was screwing with him, right? Trying to ruin his race, if you will, so that he couldn't win the championship.
And that's what he was saying, too. Marquez was just racing.
Marquez was racing, right? But but look at what Rossi did in that turn. Rossi simply rode straight and never was going to turn that corner. Rossi had no intentions whatsoever. Now, since that is a deliberate act, in my mind, what Rossi did to Marquez is far more dangerous and almost just as irresponsible as what Marquez just did to Rossi. Yet somehow Rossi gets away with it.
He didn't get away with it because he did pay for it. He pretty much lost a championship because of that shit, and he paid for it in points and penalties in the following race.
I guess that was the wrong way to put it, right? But basically, Rossi is like the golden child, right? So everybody came down on Mike Webb hard for the penalties that he imposed upon Valentino Rossi for that. And I hope Mike Webb puts the same kind of penalty on Marquez when we get to COTA. He better. If not, then we got a real problem going into this, right?
And if anything, I hate to say it because I hate doing this to people, but you got to set an example.
Always. I don't care who it is.
You just got to go out there and be like, listen, guys, this is never. We're not going to tolerate this. This is it. You saw it at its worst, and that's as bad as it's ever going to get. Because from this point on,
We're not doing that.
We're done. This is ridiculous. We are the premier racing series. We cannot have these kind of antics. Boom. There you go.
Well, here's the problem. This is going to drag on for the next 8 races.
At least.
If not the whole year. And see, this is the kind of mistake where Dovizioso, who is a much calmer and much more thinking man's racer, will win the championship by a small margin over Marquez.
And he got a freaking gift this weekend. All the Ducatis were so lost. And Dovizioso, he was turning circles trying to figure out where the hell he needed to go with that bike. And then he got passed by Marquez, so he's already losing ground in the championship. And then what happens? Marquez gets bounced out anyway. Dovizioso finishes in 5th. And so he gets to or 6th place, so he gets to collect a little bit of points and doesn't fall out the back. Let's bring us down to at least the top 10.
Yes.
Kyle Crutchlow, another win. Great job by Cal. Fantastic race. Used his brain there with about 5 laps to go to outwit the youngsters of Zarco, Rins, and Miller. Fantastic race by all. I think, once again, we can go back. Jack definitely got a little screwed on that, but what are you going to do? Vinales finished 5th. He'll probably take that considering that his weekend once again started off just like a tar, was out the back, down there in like 19th, nowhere to be, to take home 5th, keep his championship alive, keep it there, not too bad. Dovizioso, 6th. Tito were bad. Big ups to Tito, finishing 7th, could have finished higher even. Great, he was great all weekend. Him on the Ducati, there's more smiles. You always love to see a guy get proven right. The guy's got the talent, wrong bike. Simple as that. Good for him. Iannone, top 10, great. getting your ass handed to you by your young teammate, not so great. Whoops.
Yeah.
And then Hafi Siren, look at this, finishing in ninth.
Hafi had a great ride.
How does Tech 3 get these guys? Fantastic job. Bertucci and Chen. And then, you know, rounding out, then we got Petrucci, Espargo, Redding, Nakagami, Morbidelli, Lorenzo down there in 15th. We'll just say, not his weekend. Let's let the year play out before we get too big on that bag. You know, let him get a couple races more. By race 5, we'll see some more. All right, we'll just leave it at that with old Lorenzo there. We all know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But here we go. Here's our championship leader, Cal Crutchlow, in 38th. And let me just say what everybody else said for like the 9 billionth time. This is the first Brit since Barry Sheen. Yeah, well, no shit. Who else has been that good since then to lead the championship? We know. How do we have to do research on this? Like, honestly, we've only talked about this for the last 3 years, about him being the first Brit to win this, him being the first Brit for... Yeah, we get it. We get it. It's been a long time. We understand. Yes. Good. Yeah. He's a good racer.
This segment of How to Win Friends and Influence People brought to you by Skylar Vickroy. All hate mail directed to you at Skylar Vickroy 28.
It's good to see you, though. I mean, I have no ill will towards Cal. I like Cal. I like him being the bit of the hard ass. And God, you gotta have that guy who keeps... I mean, Cal really does. He speaks his mind, speaks his truth. That's what I love about the guy.
And he told the media off after the race, too.
Oh, he sure did.
Man, that was even good.
Dovizioso, the quiet assassin, sitting there second. Johann Zarco, third. And you can't even say that's good for a private team, because that's just good.
That's
third
two,
overall in the championship.
That's two private teams in the top three.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. You know who's leading the freaking team championships? LCR Honda and Tech 3 are leading the freaking team championships right now. What?
It's awesome, isn't it? It's not awesome.
Oh, that's great. I don't know how long that's going to last, but someone needs to take a picture of that. Matt Vinales, fourth, once again, keeping it alive. You know, he's a little ways back, but, you know, considering how this season's going to go, still being in fourth after what he says is two tough weekends, you know, if they get that Yamaha turned around, strong, he's going to be strong. Marquez, mm-hmm. fifth after having, you know, this weekend's points taken away. Miller in sixth. Good to see, you know, Jack doing well on the Ducati. Another guy, just like Rabat, gets on a Ducati and goes fast. Definitely there's some truth to that Honda being hard to ride from the previous year. Petrucci in sixth. Rossi down there, eighth. He'll be stronger coming on. Of course, this race is, you know, we saw that. Alex Rinsen, good job. And then he's just in front of his teammate, Ian One. Tito Rabat, 11th. Done and dusted for the week. It was an amazing weekend. I don't know if you can pack that much chaos and anything else, but the best part about it is, Jim, where are they going next?
To the USA, to Dakota, to Texas. To a place where we can actually witness it live.
Oh, we'll see it unfold. So that's going to be myself, Scott Bolton, your very own Jim McDowell. Derek Cabrera, just confirmed. He's got his plane tickets. He's coming out. Lynn Padilla. Boom. That's five hosts. I think everybody else would have a challenge just getting over here. I mean, Lynn's coming from overseas, too. I mean, we'd have to. That's a big ask for Andrew and Dave and everybody else. But, yeah, that's amazing. We're going to have all of us there. So, the meetup. As of right now, we're going to be doing this on Friday, 8, 9 o'clock. We haven't settled quite on time, but it's looking more towards like it's going to be around about 8 o'clock. It's going to be right there in downtown. It's going to be at a Mexican restaurant called Guerros. It's about a 5-minute drive from the hand-built bike show. Nothing fancy. It's not like we're going to be doing like other podcasts where we set up a whole table and we do a live podcast. This is going to be grab a beer, let's talk motorcycles, put a face in, because for us hosts, this is the first time we all get to meet each other as well. So that's exciting. It'll be a good time. Come on out. Don't be shy. Come say what's up. Tell us if you love us, you hate us. What do you like about the show? All that good stuff. Just come out, hang out, have a good time. We're doing it on a Friday before everybody gets too busy and is too tired. Yeah, so stop by. It's going to be great.
Make sure that everybody watches the social media feeds for everybody. I'm sure right. As the details become more finalized, everybody will be tweeting something or posting things on Instagram and stuff like that. So be sure everybody watches for that.
Exactly. So we have our upcoming races. We have Aragon this weekend. Look out for Chaz Davies on the track. Always goes well. It's going to be interesting to see what World Superbike. It's been already a pretty crazy, unpredictable year as far as with these regulations. So as much as everybody hates them, I mean, it's kind of making the racing good. So we'll see. Remember, you can reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. Send us an email. If you have any questions, what's coming on, what's going on, what you want to see on the show, any criticism, feedback, we take it. We love it. One of the hosts, more than likely, will get back to you. If we find something that would, you know, add to the show, we'll put it on the show. We'll bring it up. You can always reach us at Facebook at facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. You can please like and or subscribe there. We usually post a lot of our rapid fire we haven't lately because I have been slacking. But we also do interact with a lot of people on there, so make sure you jump on there. We're also on Twitter at @moto_pod, and you can follow us there for news announcements. And speaking of Twitter, you can find just about all of us on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at SkylarV28. You can also find me on Instagram there as well. Jim, where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter at @MotoRGV.
And remember, you can catch Derek. He's at @MotoDerekC, and Andrew is at @AndyCourse on Twitter. All right, Jim, you know what? My voice is getting wrecked. I actually do have to talk for a living now these days, so I probably shouldn't have been sitting up here for an hour and 40-something minutes yelling at my microphone. If it was loud, people, I am sorry. I was just really, really excited. So give us some more feedback. This is the kind of stuff we need from folks to hear so we can always constantly improve. Jim, is there anything else you'd like to say before we take off today?
No, I can't wait for everybody to get Dakota. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's just, I just can't wait. I mean, Qatar was great. Argentina was even better. I mean, can Coda possibly top it? Can we make Marquez start pointing backwards on him at the very back of the grid where he's got a loop, and then can he come through to win? Is that the craziness that's going to happen? Who knows? I'm so looking forward to it.
Can anybody knock Marquez off the throne? He's undefeated.
Yeah, he has not been beaten there at all. It's going to be fascinating.
It's about 10 days from now. I'm excited to see everybody there. Until next week, I'm Skyler. That's Jim. We'll see you later.
Bye, everyone. See you, Coda.